This is The Session, a weekly preview of the policy crashing its way through the 67th session of the Montana Legislature. I'm Kevin Trevelin. I cover the State House for Yellowstone Public Radio, and I'm a Report for America fellow.
I'm Shaylee Rager. I cover the State House for Montana Public Radio.
I'm Mara Silvers. I cover the State House for Montana Free Press.
And I'm Eric Dietrich. I also cover the State House for Montana Free Press.
Week 17 of the session. 1,313 bills have been introduced, and at least 267 have been signed into law. This week, we're watching how the Republican majority is spending their mandate from voters as the session is winding down and last-minute legislation. So it's sounding like this could be the last week of the session.
Yeah, I think like a lot of us, I've been hearing committee chairs say they expect a wrap-up Thursday or Friday this week. But of course, there are a lot of moving pieces in the Capitol right now, so that could certainly change.
Let's start with some of the most high-profile bills in the Republican social policy agenda. Two proposals that saw movement last week would put restrictions on transgender youth and athletes. Mara, what happened with House Bill 427?
Yeah, so this is the bill that would prohibit doctors from providing gender-affirming surgeries for minors who have gender dysphoria. It's a narrowed version of House Bill 113, which failed earlier in the session, so there's been a lot of anticipation to see what will happen with this version. Last Tuesday, when the bill was supposed to come up for a vote in the Senate, it got taken off the schedule kind of at the last minute. And then at the very end of the floor session, Senator Bryce Bennett of Missoula made a motion to indefinitely postpone consideration on that bill, basically set it aside for the rest of the session. 8 Republicans ended up voting in favor of that, along with Democrats. So the motion passed 27-22.
All right, so that bill's likely off the table for this session. Shaylee, what's the latest with the other hot-button bill that would stop women and girls who are transgender from playing on women's sports teams?
That bill is headed to the governor's desk. Both the House and Senate endorsed that legislation last week after it was amended with a clause that would make the policy void if the federal Department of Education threatens to pull education funding from Montana due to the policy.
That's one bucket of social issue bills some Republicans have been pushing. What about the GOP goal for limiting abortion in Montana? Where do those policies stand as we enter the final days of the session?
So a total of 5 of those proposals have passed through both chambers. These are bills that would put restrictions on early-term medical abortions. One would mostly ban later-term surgical abortions, require doctors to offer an ultrasound before a procedure. And there's also a ballot initiative for something called the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. If passed by voters next year, doctors would be required to provide life-sustaining care to newborns. Opponents say it's mostly a political effort to put abortion on the ballot during an election year. So all of those have passed and are headed to Gianforte's desk. There's also a bill that would prohibit insurance coverage of abortions if it goes through the state exchange, and that's also advanced. I will say there was one abortion-related bill that died in the Senate. It was a constitutional amendment to define personhood as beginning at conception, and that did not meet the required vote margin for to pass a constitutional amendment.
Do we expect Gianforte to sign any of these bills?
So he specifically asked for the legislature to pass 2 proposals, the one limiting abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy and the ballot initiative, which he doesn't actually have to sign. He hasn't said clearly whether or not he'll sign the other bills, but honestly, I'd be surprised if he didn't. This is an issue that's really a cornerstone of the Republican Party in Montana, and I think he'd be opening himself to a lot of criticism if he rejected any of the other proposals.
Another element of Republican social agenda has included bills to change the judiciary. Shaylee, this comes after a lot of back and forth between the two branches of government, and we're seeing a conflict between them unfold. What's going on there?
So Republican lawmakers say they're continuing their investigation into 2 allegations. One, that court administrator Beth McLaughlin misused state resources by pulling judges and justices over email on policy proposals moving through the legislature that would affect the judiciary, and then use that information to lobby on behalf of the judiciary. The second allegation is that judges are prejudging policy that will likely end up before them in court, and that they cannot judge these cases fairly because they've already decided their opinions on them.
So do we know what might happen next?
Yes. So there is a committee that's been formed to address this. It is the Select Committee on Judicial Transparency and Accountability. And during a meeting last week, Republican Senator Greg Hertz, who's the chair of the committee, said he's planning on that committee continuing to meet even after the legislative session ends. And he also said it's going to need the legislature to give it money to operate in the interim. So it's not really clear yet how long that the investigation will be going on. Democrats are really pushing back against this investigation because they say it's a violation of the separation of powers between the three branches of government. But in the immediate future, the committee is supposed to put out a report this week that details what the investigation has uncovered so far. And according to a draft outline of that report, it'll include findings on public employee use of state equipment and time for lobbying, findings on judicial branch employees retaining or not retaining public records, and findings on judicial compliance with the Code of Judicial Conduct. So that's what we'll be looking for this week.
Those are some of the major social issues swirling around the legislature. The GOP has also prioritized tax relief this session. Eric, can you break down what we've seen there recently?
Yes. So if you recall, we started off the session with Governor Gianforte calling for a suite of tax cut measures, most of them focused on reducing the tax burden on businesses and high earners. And the argument there is, of course, that that would make it easier for Montana to compete with other states for people with the means to come here and start businesses and create jobs and boost our economy. Democrats have spent all session arguing that it's unfair to prioritize tax cuts on the rich, and they say that the GOP logic is bad economic theory. They'd rather have the legislature focusing on property tax burden and helping lower-income Montanans coming out of the pandemic. However, as the policy has gotten sorted out over the course of the session, this has ended up being really an elections matter thing. Republicans have their elected majorities, and the tax package is coming together now largely as the governor wants it.
And a major centerpiece of this tax relief effort is a pair of bills that would cut Montana's top income tax rate to 6.75%, then cut it again to 6.5% a couple years later, while also reducing the number of tax brackets to two. One of those bills would also get rid of some tax credits, including for green energy production. Those policies passed the House last week on party lines and are now back in the Senate. On the House floor last week, Republican Representative Becky Beard reminded lawmakers that the governor wants to eventually cut the top income tax bracket to 5%. So these bills are really being framed as preliminary steps in the big picture on tax relief.
It's worth noting there's some other bills that are part of the governor's tax package, too, exempting more businesses from the business equipment tax, tweaking the corporate income tax model for the state. And then there's also a small property tax relief measure that expands an existing program to help out elderly homeowners. That's about $2.7 million a year in property tax relief versus the $30 million in income tax relief for that initial rate cut to 6.75%.
Kevin, another loose end that lawmakers will be addressing in the final days of the session is the roughly $2 billion spending plan for federal coronavirus aid tied to the American Rescue Plan Act, which Congress passed back in March. What's the status on that bill?
So lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are actually pretty happy with how this bill has turned out so far. And it'll be heading to a free conference committee where they have pretty wide discretion to make final little changes and tweaks to get it where they want.
And lawmakers are still waiting on instructions for how they can actually spend the federal relief dollars. So what's at stake there?
So the relief dollars are tied to so many bills moving through the legislative process that if lawmakers accidentally spend money in a way that they're not allowed to, then it could really throw a wrench in a lot of these major policies. So, for example, one area where Representative Garner mentioned a need for more work is in relation to a bill that would expand tax credits for private schools. So the bill actually includes a provision that would let the governor's budget director kind of alert lawmakers if there's an issue with this spending during the interim so that they can come back and provide some recommendations to avoid having to give millions of dollars back to the federal government.
Lawmakers also have the state budget to finalize before they can go home. Eric, what are you keeping an eye on there?
Yeah. So first, there's a conference committee meeting coming up this week where lawmakers will make their final tweaks to the big state budget bill. And then there are a number of smaller parallel measures. They're called companion bills that are moving along in parallel to the budget bill. And what those are is the primary budget bill is supposed to be just for spending allocations, but sometimes lawmakers want to spend money in a way where they need to make changes to other parts of state law or like more in the policy statutes. And so the companion bills are supposed to be the companion to the budget bill to make those changes. The challenging thing about those, where they get interesting from a wonky procedural standpoint, is that lawmakers oftentimes don't know what those tweaks need to be until the very last minute. So what they'll do is they'll end up passing essentially blank bills most of the way through the legislative process and then stop them kind of at the last minute and fill them with any budget tweaks they need. And so it's like used for all sorts of stuff routinely. For example, there's a criminal justice budget companion bill in that tweaks a statute specifying how many state judges are allowed in the state because the budget adds funding for another judge in Bozeman. So it's a lot of nuts and bolts stuff like that.
If that's nuts and bolts stuff, why is it worth paying attention to, Eric?
Yeah, so the trade-off here is the flexibility in the companion bills, you know, makes them flexible enough for people to play games with them or insert policy that they haven't been able to get enacted other ways late in the session. For example, last week we saw some Republicans bring an amendment that tried to add language to a health budget companion bill that would have set up a politically appointed committee of doctors to review Medicaid claims related to abortions. So whether or not you think that's a good idea, that's a pretty big policy shift for the state. That didn't make it in after a narrow vote where it failed. But there was another one that did. Senator Duane Colstrip brought an amendment that would add language to a justice budget companion bill directing the State Department of Justice to investigate where politically active environmental groups get their funding. And so that could be a big deal provision that becomes law without going through the usual rigmarole of public hearings and votes spaced out over days or weeks.
Are those policies finalized?
No. That's hard to tell, but no. Both of those companion bills have some more steps in the process, which could open them to tweaks that pull those provisions out or put similar ones in or put entirely different ones in. Because we're in the final days of the legislative session, there are a lot of loose ends people are tying up. And there's enough going on that it's a time in the session when people can kind of try to slip stuff in order to enact the policies they want to see enacted. That's just one of the realities of this stage of the session.
And before we go, a lot of bills are still up in the air. Policies that lost traction earlier in the process could still be revived. Also, look for big ticket items tied to recreational marijuana policy and a new broadband infrastructure program to move closer to the finish line. Mara, Shaley, Eric, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
No problem.
Glad to be here.
This has been The Session, a weekly preview of the action at the Montana State House during the 2021 legislative session. From Montana Free Press, Montana Public Radio, and Yellowstone Public Radio, thanks for listening.